Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. With me, as always, are Al Kellogg, Chris Patterson and Rachel Malcolm. And our special guest this week on the pod is Scotland head coach Gregor Townsend. Here's what's coming up on today's episode.
I don't think you would ever take it for granted having supporters. Ali had a lot of pressure early on in terms of Maro Todgi with his massive wingspan going for charge downs. They're not far away from Grand Slam.
Well, team, just one game of rugby in the Pro 14 this weekend. The Edinburgh game was unfortunately postponed due to a COVID outbreak in the Benetton side. So just the one game to focus on then. Al, I'll come to you first because it is your old team. I know you keep a close eye on them, but Glasgow getting a win away from home. It's never easy away from home in Zebre, but they got the win, didn't they? What did you make of their performance?
Oh, look, it was mixed, wasn't it? You probably look at the team that was going out there, experience-wise, it was probably always going to be mixed. I think they would have got a real shock in the kind of 10 minutes either side of half-time. Mm-hmm. The second yellow card going down to 13 men. The game could have easily gone away from them there. So you've got to credit them for that. There's a decent amount to work on. the combative nature of Zebre at times meant that Glasgow came a little bit unstuck and ended actually Glasgow didn't look as if they were playing their own game. They were getting drawn into a game that they shouldn't have been playing. See, to be honest, from a development point of view, see the fact that they got a fright and a proper fright and there were so many young lads involved, then I think you take your 5 points and you move on pretty quickly. Don't know what the rest of the guys think.
The 5 points is the best outcome, Rach, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can't get any better.
Yeah, I think it was the first 2 minutes. I was like, right, it's going to be a game. And then that was it. That was the highlight. But I think there was a few too many mistakes. You know, it looked like a lovely day to play rugby, but it looked like they were playing in, you know, wet weather rugby and whatever else. So yeah, I think they need to have a look at it from that point of view. And also, I thought it was quite a tired performance in points. I thought some kind of quite tired looking bodies out there, but like you say, I think to come away with the 5 points is massive for them, considering they did have two yellow cards. But big learning curve for a lot of the young boys getting game time there. And I thought Nick Grigg coming off the bench made a massive impact.
Massive impact. Sure. Agree with that completely. Yeah. I thought Ryan Wilson up front played well as well.
I think he's playing some of his best rugby at the moment. He really is making an impact on every game he plays in.
They were up against it. You know, I thought it started reasonably well, as you say, Rach, and it looked quite sharp. And then Ross Thompson has another really assured game at 10, one or two mistakes. You're going to get mistakes from younger players. You get mistakes from everyone. But we seem to always see the mistakes the younger players make, maybe because there's a more critical eye to see how they cope with it. But I thought he had another really assured game as a 10. And another youngish player who I think's had a brilliant season is Tom Gordon. I know he scored last week, scored this week again. It looked as if he hurt his shoulder when he scored, but like he's fast becoming a real bit of glue in that team, a hard edge and, just consistent performer. I think he'd play well. So it was, you get your 5 points away from home, a bonus point victory away from home. It's exactly, you can't get any more than that. You could, in terms of league position, you could get more in terms of performance. But as you say, the hole they were in and how hard they had to dig to get out of it after really being in control the first half, to go in two late tries just before half-time completely changes the picture of the game. And then to lose another man to the sin bin after that, you are up against it, and they did dig it out. And as you say, Nick Grigg, you know, set up Jamie Dobie's try and then obviously finished off the one later on. So that's a sign of a developing squad as well, where even when you're not playing well, somebody comes up with the goods, and they've got individuals who can do that contribute to the weekend.
Keatley coming on, set on the ship. I'm not sure exactly how long much time he got, but he's a fairly composed man. He knows what he's doing in positions like that. You'd have played a decent amount against him, Mossy.
Yeah. It was the thing that jumped out for me. There was he made a brilliant tackle quite soon after coming on. Most maybe non-rugby geeks maybe wouldn't have noticed, but it got quite tight in defence, and I can't remember if it was the 13 or the winger for Zebra got away, and it was on about the 10 metre line or 30 metres out for Glasgow. Like, it had to be made as a proper stretch, and I thought, who made that? And it was Keith. You know, just things like that just kind of jump out, and somebody who's probably got caught in position or helping covering someone else and then scrambling a tackle when the game was, I think Glasgow maybe still just behind or just had gone in front for the first time for a while. So yeah, experience. We're talking a lot about the young players and, you know, a lot at the moment because there's a lot of good young players coming through, but experience at vital moments is important as well.
So it's Ospreys up next for Glasgow Warriors at home. What kind of challenge will they face against that team, Al?
So, Jamie, like, obviously a massive game in context of the league position. Ospreys will be disappointed coming off the back of the loss to the Dragons. As we said there, Glasgow have got a huge amount to work on from the weekend, but like, I quite like that. I think that, you know, having, especially the way the league's been set up, I think that having something to work on probably challenges the young lads more so. I thought the last time Glasgow were at Scotstoun against Ulster, that was our best performance of the season so far. So they've got to try and find that again in home form.
Well, that's Glasgow. Let's look at Edinburgh now. As I said before, no game for Edinburgh this weekend due to a COVID outbreak in the Bennington squad. But let's look ahead to their next fixture. Then they're going to face Connacht next in the Guinness Pro 14. I think we'll look back at the previous game, Rach, against Scarlets at home. You know, probably a game they should have won at home. But what do you think of Edinburgh in the next couple of weeks against Connacht?
Yeah, I think Connacht's a hard place to go and win. So it'll be a tough game for them. And I think one that they'll want to go in and put in a really good performance after, obviously, a disappointing loss to Scarlets. I do think they've been building and they're kind of on an upward trajectory in terms of their performances. So hopefully one that they can go and challenge.
Connacht are a good side. Like, Connacht play their second top in the conference, like 20-odd points above Edinburgh in the conference. And we all know it's a hard place to go. It used to be a really hard place to go because Connacht would want a battle, they'd want an arm wrestle. It would be really, really hard. But it's now a hard place to go because of the quality of rugby they play. They really do. I mean, we saw it at the early part of the season when they played at BT Manningfield and scored some wonder tries. They've continued that all the way through. They're one of the few teams, if only team, I think, to beat Leinster and Dublin this year. So it is a big ask. It's a frustration for Edinburgh not to be able to play last week after the disappointment of the Scarlets result, although there was element of the performance that I thought, you know, and Richard Cockerell said afterwards, there was, you know, certainly positive bits, but the result was the frustration thing. And after a game like that, where you've found a bit of rhythm, certainly in attack, and you've fallen on the wrong side of the scoreline, you want to play right away. So to get that game cancelled or postponed was frustrating. But they're probably going to have to go to Connacht. That sounds obvious, but score a few points to win, because Connacht have an attacking edge that they're likely to score some points as well. But Edinburgh have four games left with that Treviso game postponed, Connacht, Cardiff, Dragons, and then whenever the Treviso one gets replayed. So still European qualification to play for. And you target, 4 wins as possible, although 3 of them are away from home.
I've got a question for Rach, if I can. Rach, it was obviously International Women's Day on Monday, and there was loads going out across Scottish rugby to inspire the likes of my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Images of yourself and your teammates and all the great things that you guys do. But if you were going to put up 3 pictures of the people who are women in particular who had inspired you, who would it be?
Oh, okay.
For context, you've not begun any heads up on this, Rachel.
This is
pretty harsh to put somebody on the spot right away, Al.
Rachel's top 10 different female rugby players in the world. She's going to eat this question up and deliver us an inspirational answer.
I've got 3 people, but they're all for different aspects of my life. So my gran is one. So she's, I think she's 93 now, but she lives life to the full and is like the kindest, most caring person. So she's who I live my life aiming to be like. Then for my work is a woman called Mary Neville, who's basically one of the leading women in science in the world. She's my boss at my place of work, and she's a pretty cool human. She also used to be GB hockey captain. So kind of a good example of how you can balance work and life. And then probably someone who was an inspiration to me growing up all through playing hockey and as a PE teacher to me and a hockey coach to me was Rona Simpson, who was also GB hockey captain, was a big inspiration to me coming through. So that would be my three off the cuff.
Nailed it though, absolutely nailed it.
I was delighted now to be joined by Scotland head coach Gregor Townsend. Gregor, thank you very much for coming on to the podcast. I thought we'd just start with you know, maybe a review of the Six Nations so far. You know, we should have had three games by now. We've had two. I just wanted to get your take on the opening weekends in the Guinness Six Nations.
Yeah, well, I think the standard of rugby has been very high. I think the games have been classics. A couple of them certainly have been classics. And I think we're now beginning to get used to the fact there's no crowds there. And certainly feels like a Six Nations competition with what's been produced on the field. Obviously, we miss the occasions, the weekends, and the amount of people that are at the games. But I think it's a step up from what we had in the autumn, the standard of rugby and the spectacle, the intensity. So, yeah, it's been obviously a privilege to be a part of. And great to see our players play well in both games, even though we didn't get two wins.
Gregor, you mentioned there a privilege to be part of. It's a privilege to be part of at any point. But is that even more highlighted, or should I say any year? Is that even more highlighted this year because it's an exception to what everybody else is doing?
Absolutely. And look, I'm not imagining you'll ask me about the England game, but when we saw the videos that were coming in of people celebrating the final whistle, it hit home even more of what it means to the country to beat England, but also what people were going through. They've not been able to do the things that they love doing, be around people like we've had the chance to do. We're in a hotel, we're working as a management coaching group and a playing group. We're traveling together to an away game and we're able to play in the Six Nations. So we are aware of the privilege, the responsibility, and the sort of good fortune that the professional sport has allowed to continue through this time, which has affected so many people and is so challenging for so many people.
Who do you think will be more excited once we get through this? It'll be the supporters flooding back into the stands, or will it be the players playing in front of that passion again?
Oh, I don't think you would ever take it for granted having supporters, because all three of us have played professional level and have not had many supporters at games and for the national team as well. So we still remember those days. But the last two or three years, the amount of supporters that have came to the games at BT Murrayfield and connected with the players has been amazing. And I've said to the squad, we're living through special and unique times. It's unique to have sellout crowds at national level. So we'll never take that for granted. And it did give the players a big boost, but can you imagine the feeling the players will have when they're running out to noise again, and huge noise when it comes around to whenever that date will be. But obviously let's hope it's in 2021.
How is the vibe in camp now? Obviously a little bit of a frustration with the France postponement. How are the boys kind of bouncing back from that and looking towards the next game?
They've been pretty good, Rachel. They were obviously disappointed. I think it was on the Wednesday or the Thursday we found out the France game wasn't going ahead. And even more disappointed when I told them we're still training the following day. So the motivation levels did go down for that session, but they did switch on for the 40 minutes or hour that we trained.
I know how that feels.
Yeah. And it was a sense of deja vu as well, because we've been here before. We got to the team run day back in March before we were about to play Wales. This time we thought the game would go ahead because it had been given the official go ahead, I think on the Tuesday or the Wednesday. So yeah, I think the pleasing thing was after the Wales result and defeat, the mood of the camp hadn't changed. We were very together, and the quality of training was still there. So the players are aware that the performances they've put in have been really good. Obviously, there's always aspects you can improve. And they were really looking forward to building on momentum over in Paris. Now, it'll be more of a challenge now that they've been away at their clubs and they're back in with us, and we have to get focused on what should be three games in succession. But from what we've seen of our players this season, that'll be something that they'll take in their stride.
In terms of the postponement as well, I mean, I think most of the view is the postponement of that game at the end of that week. But with all the planning and preparation and periodization that goes into a tournament, how disruptive is it? Because it changes that whole 8-week block or 7-week block, or are the players and the coaches and all the staff pretty flexible for another week, whenever it may be?
Yeah, you've got to be adaptable. And it's something that we've learned to be over the last 12 months with various changes and to what you do in your training week, how you conduct your meetings, how many tests we're now doing, virus tests. So changing the last 3 weeks to having three tests in 3 weeks rather than a week off into two tests is just something we're going to have to adapt to. Mm-hmm. At least the opposition are going to face the same scenario as us. It looks like it'll be 60 turnarounds going into the three games. So that's a challenge in itself, and that you lose a training day and your focus is more on recovery. But as you get through the tournament, you probably spend less time on tactical, technical improvements anyway. You're looking to get the players in as good a place physically so they can still perform in that last round.
We've talked on this podcast a few times about resilient rugby players, and I can only think that this is another element that adds that resilience to your group of players, Gregor, and to the coaches. But to go back, now we've done this in a little bit of a funny order, but first time in 38 years, you talk about the emotion of people celebrating it. It was an incredible win down at Twickenham. I mean, the performance for the full 80 minutes, you must have been absolutely delighted with. But one other special moment that stood out for me was Dave Cherry and Cammy Redpath lifting that Kolkata Cup at the end. That showed a culture and a team spirit that I know you'll be incredibly proud of as well.
Yeah, there was so much to be proud of in that performance, Al. And it was a great moment at the end for Stuart to step aside and allow the two new caps to lift the trophy. Say something on the spur of a moment that he thought was right for the team, and all credit to him. I think the way the players led as we got closer to the game and during the 80 minutes was very impressive. We handled the yellow card to Finn in that period really well. The players controlled the clock, controlled the game. I think we even won that period 3-0. So that was great to see the leader step up. The accuracy around our set piece, accuracy around our attacking game and poor weather conditions was great to see. And also the physicality, right? To take on any team in the Six Nations, you need to be physical, whether it's in defence or in the contact area. And when you play England away from home, you know you're going to be tested up front, and our forwards were outstanding on the day. So, yeah, so much to be proud of. And obviously just to get the trophy was a great feeling, but the performance itself was up there with our best performances over the last few years.
Was one of the best aspects of the performance the control in terms of the decision-making? You talk about the leadership and the players on the field and the preparation, but it's also the execution of skill under pressure, under that massive kind of charge of physicality that England pose and difficult weather. So to be so controlled for an entire 8 minutes, is that the most controlled, composed performance that you can remember?
Yeah, it's certainly up there. And control comes through your halfbacks and your 10. And Ali and Finn were excellent in that regard. Ali had a lot of pressure early on in terms of Maro Itoje with his massive wingspan going for charge downs. But they didn't get flustered by that. They went, right, let's just move the point of attack and maybe kick to the other side or maybe run the ball, which we did a few times. The control and balance and how we played the game, there's a lot of patience there around taking the space when it was on, but turning the opposition at times to get better ball back. Stuart Hogg's kicking that that day was fantastic. I think that's probably up there with the best he's ever played for Scotland. I remember his game against the All Blacks a few years ago was at such a high quality, but that was probably even better. There's control and control from the pack. Like, I don't think we lost a line out that day, and we know England's line out is very strong, and we stole two or three line outs off them. So Johnny Gray is in charge of the defensive side of the line out. Scott Cummins in charge of the attack side. So they've done the preparation and worked well together on the day.
It's good to see it's improved since Al used to lead that part of the the Wales game as well. I mean, although we fell on the wrong side of the result, it's easy to say and it's hard to hear, but there were really positive elements of that performance as well against Wales, regardless of the result at the end.
Yeah, you know, I think we played some like better rugby at times against Wales, and better rugby's like that's for maybe different opinions on that subject. But what I mean is we were able to move the ball and find space in the defence, whether it's through set piece plays or through counter attack, partly because of the weather, but also because of the players we have. So that got us into a 17-3 lead and got us into, I think, about 5-6 yards before the try line with 5 minutes to go before half time. The 2 minutes after that was disappointing. And I think we gave away 4 penalties in succession and enabled Wales to have an attack back into our 22, which they finished off well. So that was frustrating, but there were real positive aspects. And probably the most positive aspect for me was our character when we went down to 14 men and when we went behind on the scoreboard with 14 men. We came back once and scored a try to get ahead, and then at the end we threw everything at Wales to almost come away with a win and a try in the dying second. So that was pleasing. The result obviously is disappointing, but in terms of performance and character, that was up there.
You mentioned a lot of different players when you brought up the England game and also the players in the Wales game. You must be really happy with the depth of the squad at the moment, not only with the likes of, you know, your leaders that you talk about at line-out time, but also the young boys coming through. Do you feel like you're probably in one of the best positions you've been in as a squad for a long time?
Yeah, I believe so. And in a few positions, we have real competition and players have to play well to just make this squad of 34, 35 that assembles for our camps. And then to get into the 15 and the 23, they're going to have to be in very good form. So that makes it harder for our selection meetings have gone on longer this time than the last campaign. Makes our training sessions much better because you've got an attack going up against you or a defence going up against you that's at a high level. And it's exciting seeing young players come into our squad and grab their opportunities. That's exciting for the future. So yeah, we have more depth. We have players coming into their prime years as well. Players I've already mentioned, like Finn and Hoggy and Johnny Gray, sort of late 20s when they're leading the team now. But all the other countries we're up against have got really good depth too, and they're producing lots of young players that are stepping up. So we just got to make sure we keep working, keep improving and learning from the lessons we have, whether they're in victories or defeats, to be a better team next time we get to play.
Well, one other thing that you've been running, I suppose, concurrently is inviting younger players to train. And some of the players that Kenny Rachel mentions there, Matt Curry's, Rufus McLean stepped up, as has Jamie Dobby stepped up, Rory Darge is there. Having been lucky enough to be at some of the sessions, what I see, and we said this to Mark last week on the podcast, is we see a general competition from these young players in training. I think, you know, in years gone by, we maybe have would have seen the difference between a young player stepping up to be invited to train. But these lads, it must kind of inspire you to see the position they're in when they come in. Yes, there's improvements to be made, but there's a real edge to them at training, and they're adding to the environment.
Absolutely. And they're learning off the best players in their position in the country. So they on Sunday this last week, we had Alex Samuel and Max Williamson, two young second rows who are both 18, a year out of school, both with big potential. And they're training alongside Grant Gilchrist and Scott Cummings. There was a physical session, too. It was live mauls and live defence. But they're picking up what Grant and Scott will be doing the line out, their preparation, if they really want to be the best players that they can be, they'll be taking to the things they've learned and using that on a daily basis at their clubs. I've seen these young players come in and pick the brains of the players they're working alongside, and also the coaches. So I think it's been a real positive aspect of this Six Nations. It wouldn't have happened before because the under-20s would be playing concurrently and we train against the under-20s as part of our preparation. But now with no 20s tournament, we've seen a few players under 20 in our squad and a couple just who were in the 20s last year. And the likes of Rufus McLean and Jamie Dobie, who were invited to train a month ago with us, have impressed us not only in when they train with us, but what they're doing with Glasgow, that they're full members of our squad now and are realistically got a chance of playing international rugby in the near future.
Okay, sticking with the squad, then you've updated your squad today and invited a few more players into that squad. So Nick Hayne, Rufus McLean and Sam Skinner are included in the 34-man group. What warrants their selection? And just talk us through maybe a few of the players that have dropped out.
Yeah, well, we picked up some injuries, so that happens week to week. Richie Gray and Blade Thompson, Josh Bayliss, Gary Graham, who've been involved with us previously, have all got injuries, hopefully not too serious. But that's given other players opportunities and players on form like Sam Skinner and Nick Haining to come in. So that is... That's encouraging that we get to see other players that have been with us before, played in the autumn. And I know it's been tough for some of our players based outside of Scotland, and that they've fallen on the wrong side of selection this time because of the various factors around. They would have to leave on a Wednesday if they don't make our 23. The travel just now isn't great, so getting them up and down from Exeter and Bristol and London hasn't been easy. And just with us trying to protect the bubble or the group as much as possible, we've looked more at players playing in Scotland and young players to come in and train with us rather than the squad we would normally have, which is just your 35 and there's no restrictions. So yeah, we know the players are really keen to be involved in camps and we are watching everybody outside of our Six Nations games. I think at the weekend there's about 8 games that we were watching. A few guys scoring tries, which was great to see down in England, and also over in Zebra. So yeah, that competition for places keeps going right throughout the tournament. And who knows, there might be someone not in the squad just now that plays a big part in our game against France in 2 or 3 weeks' time.
The next game up's Ireland. Just look ahead to that, and I suppose the last 3 or 4 fixtures have been quite similar. The Open Nations Cup game, the World Cup game, maybe were a little bit different to the opening game of the Six Nations last year. But do you expect more of the same from Ireland in terms of they've almost rolled their sleeves up and came really direct at Scotland and had a little bit of success? Would you expect more of the same, or have you seen a clear change and under the new coaching regime in Ireland?
There's been subtle changes. I don't think the DNA of how Ireland play hasn't changed a great amount. They want to keep hold of possession. They do have a strong kicking game too, but they will they'll run off nine, especially when they get closer to your 22. And they're so good in contact that they back themselves to go through huge number of faces against any defence. I have seen more width in their game and a different approach to defending. Just a couple of tweaks here. But it's very similar in terms of the team we'll play too. The experienced players are all there that have been there the last few years. And they're a really tough opponent. We've lost the last four or five games against them, so we know how difficult a challenge they'll be. And it's been frustrating on a couple of those occasions where we've had a lot of play. Last year, Six Nations in particular, we played some really good rugby at the beginning and the end of the game. In the autumn, the first half hour was some... We definitely imposed our attack on them, but in the second half, they had the upper hand. So we know we're going to have to be there for 80 minutes, and every moment will count against them, because they are a team with experience, a team now on form and confidence, having arguably could have won their first three games. Obviously won well against Italy, but had a chance at the end of the Wales game when they were a man down, and chances at the end of the France game to win.
Mm-hmm. They're also a team that's picking from four provinces who are doing incredibly well. So they're going to have players, although, I mean, the two things that stand out are how well the provinces are doing, but also the fact that the Ireland are only one win in three. Now, that their Italy game was probably the most complete performance, albeit against the opposition who other teams have beaten. But to your point, like they're going to, it's not big changes you need to make to get these wins.
No, look, if they'd maybe made touch with a penalty kick at the end of the Wales game, they would have a very good opportunity to win that, having had a man down for a man less for over an hour. And against France, they did have chances. It was a close scoreline too. They got held up over the line in the corner in that second half. They put France under a lot of pressure. So they're not far away from coming here with a grand slam still on their minds. And that's the great thing about this tournament. There's been some close games, high quality performances, and I think each game that is played, or most of the games that are played, you don't know who's going to win.
Gregor, as a Lions year as it stands, you know, nothing's changed there. 2021 Lions tour, South Africa are the opponents. Now, lots of questions around what that's going to look like, that tour. But what would it mean for you and all your coaching staff to have players in Scotland involved in that tour? I know you know the tour well and how important that tour is for rugby. What would it mean to you personally to have, you know, some of your players involved?
Look, I would be delighted as a coaching group if we get some really good representation on the tour. What that number will be, we'll see. But I believe our players are in a stronger position than the last two or three tours to have representation in a number of positions too. So we know it's going to be a competitive selection, because there's some excellent players from Ireland, Wales and England too. And there'll be some choices that you could go either way. So look, we've still got three games to go, and those three games will have a bearing on how many of our players go on that tour, whether it's over here or in South Africa. But so far our players have put their hands up in two really physical games against direct opponents. For getting a place on the tour.
Well, Gregor, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. Best of luck with the preparation for this week's game against Ireland and beyond, and we'll get you back on the podcast very soon.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers, Gregor.
Thanks, Gregor.
That's all from us this week on the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week to look back on Scotland's match with Ireland on Sunday at 3 p.m. in the Guinness Six Nations. See you then.